Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. If you, O Lord, kept a record of sins, O Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, therefore you are feared. I wait for the Lord, my soul waits, and in his word I put my hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning, more than watchmen wait for the morning. O Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from all their sins. Guilt, remorse, shame, these are words which we don't like. These are feelings we don't like to feel, but they're very good for our souls. Similar to any pain we feel, this pain hurts because, but that's good. Because it tells us something is wrong, and until we realize something is wrong, we're not going to do anything about it. Our guilt, remorse, and shame inform us that something is wrong with our souls. Something is wrong. They are the symptoms that tell us our souls have a disease. They are, in a sense, a painful mercy from God. This is where the psalmist is. Because of his guilt, remorse, and shame, he realizes that he is not well. He is not right. He realizes both how great and how deep his sin is. And because he realizes it, as painful as that is, he is in a position to do something about it. Listen to verse 3 again. The psalmist says, if you, O Lord, kept a record of sins, who could stand? This verse reminds me of a movie that came out about, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, Bruce Almighty, where Bruce, played by Jim Carrey, first meets God, and God's played by Morgan Freeman. And God tells Bruce that he knows all about him. He even has a file on him. And so Bruce goes over to the filing cabinet and pulls it open. And instead of the cabinet opening, you know, a foot and a half, like most filing cabinets, his file extended out 40-some yards. It contained all of his wrongs, all of his sin, all the blasphemous stuff he ever said, ever thought, ever did. Now, what I think is very insightful about this psalmist is that he knows if God kept a record of his sins, there's no way he could stand before God. And he doesn't even suggest or argue that, you know, God had done a lot of good stuff to make up for it, though. No, he doesn't do that. The balances are decidedly uneven. You can't lift a boulder on a teeter-totter by sprinkling some pebbles on the other side. The psalmist realizes in his heart of hearts how great his sin is before God, and he has no leg to stand on before him. And in addition to the greatness of his sin, he realizes how deep his sin is. Verse 1. Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. This is not a prayer of a guy who assumes he is basically okay with God. This is not a prayer of a guy who thinks God's just going to turn a blind eye to his transgressions. This is a prayer of a desperate man throwing himself at God's feet. The psalmist doesn't even attempt or barter with God or argue with him because he knows how great and deep his sin is. Instead, he simply begs for undeserved mercy. And it's helpful to remember who is talking right here. This is the psalmist speaking. This person is not a bad guy. This person is a member of God's covenanted people, Israel. He is someone who wrote songs, psalms, and prayers. And yet when he takes an honest look at his life, how he lives his life, he sees how often it does not match up with what God would want. In the light of God's holiness and perfections, this worship leader sees the darkness that lives in his heart, and he feels the guilt, the misery, and the shame of his sin. But, unlike others, his guilt, his remorse and shame does not end in despair. It actually leads him to hope, which at first blush is kind of puzzling because when's the last time you ever heard of shame and remorse and guilt leading to hope? Usually it leads to more shame, more guilt, more despair. This is why many people, instead of facing up with their shame, remorse, and guilt, it's much easier to excuse it, to ignore it, to minimize it. But not our psalmist. He knows that these are a painful mercy from God to lead him to the one and only place where he can find hope and relief. The psalmist turns to God. Listen to verses 4 and 5. But with you, God, there is forgiveness. Therefore, you are feared. You are revered. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits, and in his word I put my hope. The psalmist takes all of his guilt, all of his shame, all of his remorse, and lays it at God's feet. Why does the psalmist do this? When there are so many people, maybe some here today as well, where that would be the last thing they would want to do, is to bring their sin before God. Are you kidding me? To go and admit to God the real magnitude and depth of sin in their life? No. Instead, what many people do is you go to God with your best resume. You go to God and say, look at all this I've done. Look at the times I did this. Look, I'm okay, right? Now, why is there this great difference between these type of people and the psalmist who comes to God broken? It's because of who we think God is. It all comes down with who we think God is. If we believe that God is an exacting God, a demanding God, a God that when you come to him gives you the told you so, or the, let's see if I can get it, I'm really disappointed in you look. I feel like I get that with my kids sometimes. It's kind of looking like this a little bit. A God who is not quick to forgive, who expects us to work off our debt. If that's who you think God is, like so many people today, then yeah, you are not going to go running to God to ask for forgiveness, to admit your sin. Instead, you are going to avoid God as best as you can, or you're going to try to make yourself look as acceptable as you can before God. But there is no way you will come to God just as you are. You will never come to him broken and empty-handed if that's the way you think God is. But that is not the way the psalmist thinks about God. Listen to how he ends his psalm in verses 7 and 8. He says, O Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love. And with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from all their sins. Because of who he believes God is, the psalmist is quick to run to him, broken with nothing to offer him, and fall at his feet with guilt, with his guilt and shame. The psalmist hopes in the Lord, trusts in him for his forgiveness, for his redemption based solely on the character of God, based on what God has done in the past. As the psalmist remembers all that God has done for his people, he realizes two things about God. First, with God is unfailing love. And second, with God is full redemption. Listen, over and over again, God's people in the Old Testament failed to live as they ought. And again, God would extend his steadfast love to them and redeem them back. And because this is what God does over and over again, the psalmist realizes this is who God is. This is God's character. He is the type of God who extends his love over and over again, doing whatever is necessary to save his people from their sins. That is the type of God that the psalmist serves. And because the psalmist knows this about God, it gives him the reassurance to say to him in verse 8 that God himself will redeem Israel from all their sins. The psalmist, at this point, has no idea how it's going to happen, but he's absolutely confident that based on what God has done in the past, based on what God has said about himself, based on what God has promised, that God will forgive, will save, will redeem all who turn to him. Because the God of this psalmist is the God of amazing grace. And we who live on this side of the cross know greater than the psalmist could ever have imagined the lengths God would go to forgive us, to redeem us, to save us through his Son, Jesus. So please join me by turning in your hymnals to number 200, where we will read and sing about this amazing grace of God. Number 200. Like we just did, after we read number 200, we'll sing three hymns and we'll sing the verses that are identified with the little arrows. Number 200. God's amazing grace. Apparently it starts with the people, which is always hard. So I'm going to give you a 1, 2, 3 and let you guys start, all right? So 1, 2, 3.